You know, all those crazy people saying horrible things were directing them at me, not you.
They were directing them to you because you had me.
No, they were directing them at me because I screwed up their big Citizen Kane plans, that's all.
And welcome to what many people have called the Citizen Kane of podcasts, the ultimate Gilmore Girls movie night podcast. I am Philip.
I am Courtney.
And we're excited to be here, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
It's later than normal.
Yes. So if we fall asleep in the middle of this recording, oh well. So Courtney, how's life with you?
Life's good. It's hot. It feels like the world is on fire.
Every single day we have an excessive heat warning.
Not tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow the high is like 83 or something.
Yeah, but then it's in the 90s all weekend and then the 100s all next week.
Yeah.
It's hot. I do not like it.
Definitely. And
even though Muffin is a working dog from Australia, she does not like being outside or in the heat.
So what are we going to do about that?
I mean, nothing. I'm going to keep walking her. She's going to keep laying down in the shade of trees and making me drag her and making her daycare trainers chase her around the room because she won't go outside with the other dogs.
Yeah. So other than that, how are you doing?
Good.
Good.
No. Good in life.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Reading anything fun?
I'm reading some really bad books.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm reading some really trashy romance books because I read the last book of a series. Because someone on Goodreads recommended it. And I was like, oh, this is, I mean, not great caliber of writing, but like, I like the story. And so I decided to read the whole rest of it. And they are all not great. But now I'm so deep into it, I just have to keep going. So I'm on book 4 of the 4 books in the series. And it's a lot.
Okay.
It's a lot. It's taking a lot out of me. I'm listening to some really good books, though.
Okay.
I've decided to listen to audiobooks more. I just bumped up how quickly I'm listening to my podcasts, and it's making them go a lot faster.
Oh, really? What do you listen to?
I think it's like 1.7 now.
Oh, wow.
I have it at 1.5.
I do mine at 1.5.
I have always been at 1.5, and I decided to bump it up to see if I could get through my podcast faster, and I can, and I can still hear them, so that's what I'm doing.
I think 1.5 might be my limit.
1.7 is not too bad. It depends on the podcast. If it's like well-known actors doing it, they tend to speak at an even speed. Mm-hmm. So you can speed it up. But if it's like random people who just like started a podcast, yeah, I probably won't be able to listen to our podcast at 1.7 because it'll be too fast. Like I cannot listen to Sheena's podcast at 1.7 because she talks very fast in real life. But now have you ever like accidentally like gone back to normal speed on your podcasts?
No.
Oh my gosh.
I have not.
I've done it a couple of times, like if I was trying to like record something to post on our socials for this, and then like I'll go listen to another podcast and it's at normal speed, mm-hmm. and like it's everything sounds really slow, like really slow. And I know they're speaking at a normal speed, but I'm just used to everything being really fast in my ears. The worst part about 1.7 is that all of the theme songs are really fast.
But do the ones you listen to have ads?
Yes. Most of them.
I've become really good at skipping the ads.
I've gotten really good at it. It's hard. I had to readjust when I moved it up to 1.7, though. I didn't have to hit it as many times.
Why not? Because it would still be the 30. Like, if it's 30 seconds, it would still be 30 seconds.
I don't know. For whatever the reason, I was hitting it the same number of times, and it was, like, going too far.
That doesn't make any sense. Because it's still 30
seconds. Isn't it, like, 30 seconds of
the podcast?
Oh, I think it's, like, of the speed, though.
I don't think it has anything to do with the speed. I think it's 30 seconds of the podcast.
Well, I had a hard time with it. So.
If anybody out there knows,
anyway,
let us know.
The audiobooks I've listened to lately, I used to only listen to memoirs because I can't read memoirs because nonfiction bores me when I'm.
That's almost all I listen to.
I can't read. But so I generally will only listen to nonfiction, like listening, because I can't physically read it. So I did that, and I listened to a lot of memoirs. But then my coworker was recommending this one book to me, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get it from the library for like years. So I listened to that, and it was really good. That was called Whispers. And then I started listening to a book called War D by Freda McFadden, because she wrote two really, really good books that I liked called The Housemaid and like The Housemaid Returns or something. I don't know. Two of those books. And it was terrible. It was all about a psych ward. And it was completely unbelievable and unrealistic. And the main character was stupid. And I got really mad. And I was walking and listening to the podcast. And at some point I was like, "You're so dumb!" Like, out loud while I was walking. And Muffin turned around and looked at me. Thankfully, no people were around. What's going on with you?
I'm reading. I don't listen to books. I'm reading. I don't do that.
Condescending.
I don't listen to books. I don't know. I have a hard time listening to books. I need to read.
It's all right. You do have to pay attention. Like, today I was listening to something while I was working, and I had to go back a chapter because I realized I wasn't listening.
I'm reading The Office Ladies book, which is really good.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to read a Charles Barkley book next. And then I'm going to get back to my New York Mets book. I took a break from that because these are library.
The one that was like the bad guys.
Yeah, because these are library books. And the New York Mets book is the book I own. So I was going to get through that. And then I want to read Pet Sematary, Stephen King, because I think Paramount is about to do a prequel of that, like a series.
Oh,
I think it's Paramount Plus is doing a series.
Do we have to watch that for this? I don't want to watch that.
I don't know, but I know nothing about it. So
I watched it in high school, and it was very scary, and I didn't like it. I have now found a man who does not force me to watch scary movies, and it has made life so much better.
I love scary movies.
I dated so many people that made me watch scary movies with them, and it was miserable.
Man, I love scary movies.
I know you do, but you don't force me to watch them with you. And that's true. I know that it makes, like, your face right now, you're so upset, but you don't make me watch them, so I'm okay with it.
That's basically what's going on with me right now.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's us.
We're going to have a second dog this week.
We are going to have a second dog.
Muffin Sister Trixie.
Definitely. Should be fun.
We'll see.
I'll only do it
As Lee said, it's going to be a handful.
I'll only be there a couple days, though. Because we're going to Galveston next week.
Yes.
Me and the girls. Should be fun.
And I'm going to be taking care of two dogs.
You'll hang out with two dogs.
And Suki.
We'll hide.
Yeah, I'm not going to see Suki.
And let's get into Citizen Kane. That is what you all are all here for, to listen to us.
Wait!
What?
I've got Vanderpump News.
Oh, I thought we were done.
They're filming!
Yeah?
They're filming, and now they're on a trip at Lake Tahoe to go see Lisa's new restaurant, which is, like, nothing. They were, like, demoing a wall or something. It, like, wasn't even open or anything. And Sandoval is with them all, and they all took a picture together with Sheena having her arm around Sandoval, and people are all really mad at her now because she had that big mic drop moment in the finale. And James was there, and he had Graham, which for fans of the show who know this, but my husband is not one of them. Graham was Raquel's dog.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That she had while she was with James. And James, there was a whole storyline last season about how James was upset because he wasn't allowed to see Graham anymore, and Raquel had to, like, set boundaries that he wasn't allowed to see Graham anymore, which I think is really neat because they dated for a really long time. Anyway, the story in the tabloids right now is that Graham was taken to a shelter, and because Lisa, or Vanderpump Dogs, has, like, a whole presence in L.A., they found out that Graham was in the shelter, and so they reunited Graham with James. So, essentially, Raquel's dog was taken to a shelter, either by her or her family, and now James has the dog. But I don't know how accurate that is. But I think, like, Page Six reported it, which is fairly accurate.
Yeah, they're pretty good, I think.
But I'm glad that James is with Graham. But Ariana did say that Graham is really poorly behaved. But she also hates Raquel, so, like, who knows how accurate that is. I wouldn't blame her if she lied about Graham being a bad dog.
Mm-hmm.
She's really cute. He's really cute.
So that's Vanderpump Rules news.
Yeah, there's more, but you don't want to hear it.
You're right.
Okay.
Alright, so, you can tell me more next time.
There will be new things by then.
You can tell me the new things then.
This is a never-ending cycle of Vanderpump news.
Okay, so Citizen Kane, where was this said in Gilmore Girls?
This was said in season 1, episode 15. Lorelai says, "No, they were directing them at me because I screwed up their big Citizen Kane plans, that's all." And then in season 4, episode 6, Suki says, "This is Citizen Kane's house." I'm having a hard time with the word citizen.
Citizen Kane.
Citizen.
Citizen. I know, but nobody says the Z.
Citizen.
I've never said the Z in citizen. I always say like an citizen? S. Yeah, I know it's a Z, but I've always.
Do other people?
I think everybody says like an S. Citizen.
I've always worked hard to say citizen.
I don't think people do that.
But it's a Z.
It is a Z. But I don't think people. I think people. I don't think people pronounce citizen. The Z. I think they say like an
citizen.
S.
I've always citizen. Said citizen.
I never have citizen. Citizen. Citizen.
It's lost all meaning.
It's a dumb word. Citizen.
Anyway.
Citizen.
Right. Those are the two times.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I got.
What's your background with this movie?
I've seen this movie lots of times. I was trying to think of this last night when we were watching it. When I saw it first, and I honestly don't remember. But it was before my blog. I think I watched it with my mom. My mom and I watched a lot of old movies together. So I've seen it several times, and I really enjoy it. I was excited to watch this one.
Okay. I saw this for the first time with you. You had me watch it.
Yeah, why did I have you?
I don't remember.
Where were we living at the time?
Oklahoma City. Okay. I mean, it was like seven, early. 8, 9 years ago.
Did I have it on DVD?
I have it on DVD. One of us has it on DVD.
I think it's me.
But I have no idea why I would have it. But,
yeah,
you probably did. Yeah. I was supposed to watch it in college for a class.
Oh, really?
But I didn't because it looked boring.
That's so surprising to me because, like, you like old movies.
I do. But
so it seems strange to me that you wouldn't like this one.
Citizen Kane did not sound
like the title didn't sound interesting to you.
Title didn't.
See, I like it because it's like a biopic, but like not real.
Yeah,
there's a word for that, I'm sure.
Fictional biopic.
I don't know. Mocky biopic.
You're making stuff up now.
Yeah, I am.
So I had no interest, and I don't remember if we watched it and there wrote a paper on it, and I just messaged. I just wrote a paper. Or what, but there was a class I was supposed to watch that. That and another movie that I don't think I watched. Why did I watch? I was a decent student at this point.
When was it?
It was my sophomore, junior year when I was actually doing like well in class.
Which sophomore year?
I only had one sophomore year.
How many years did you double?
I had two freshman years.
Okay. So you were not a super senior.
No. I was a freshman. Yes, I was a repeat freshman. So,
oh my god.
I did not watch it. I don't remember why. I don't even remember what class it was in.
I will say, because I know that you think things are overrated. Whenever something is highly praised, you tend to shoot that down. I will say I think that it is overly praised. I do like this movie. But I don't know that it should be considered the classic that it is.
Okay. That's not necessarily true.
What's not? Oh, about you.
My favorite band's the Beatles, and they're overly praised.
Okay.
So, my favorite movie, Singing in the Rain, which is still like the top.
Not for people your age.
No, but like any type of like film in history list, it's going to be in the top three.
Top three?
Mm-hmm.
You think very highly of that movie.
Maybe I'm thinking of movie musicals top three.
Yeah, I think that's what you're thinking.
Movies, it's always in the top 10, though.
Okay, what do you think about Casablanca?
I like Casablanca.
You do?
Uh-huh.
I thought I watched it with you and you didn't like it.
No, I like Casablanca.
I feel like you're just trying to prove me wrong.
No, I don't like Gone with the Wind.
I don't like that one.
And that's
because it's like at least 3 hours too long.
Okay.
I think we have to watch that one
too. Yeah. But no, I like Casablanca.
Oh, okay. I didn't think I liked it.
That's time after time, and I love this one. So, let's talk about Citizen Kane. It starts in 1941. And Orson Welles. That's not his character's name, is it? Charles Foster Kane is dying, and his last word is Rosebud, and then the snow globe falls and crashes.
Yes.
And
this was something I noticed for the very first time. Now, I've seen this movie at least 10 times. This was the first time I ever noticed that there is no one in the room to hear his last word.
I was thinking that the whole movie. I was like, how do they know that's his last word?
Yeah, how does everybody know what his
last word is? Unless there's somebody hiding, like, in the corner.
Why would someone be hiding? He's an old man that's going to die. That was clearly his hospice nurse who, like, knew he was coming.
And that's the beginning of this movie not being as good as it should be.
Okay.
Because it started with that. But yeah, I kept wondering why... How they knew what his final word was. Because after he said that is when someone came in.
It had to have been that nurse that like spread the word that was his final word. And there's no way she heard it.
Yeah.
There's no way. Because
she was outside his room.
Yeah, Yeah, she didn't come, like, it wasn't like the glass broke and then she like immediately came in. Like, there was some time.
Yeah.
I've never noticed that. Like, I've never had that
before. Oh, really?
Watching it. No.
And then we see the newsreel of his whole life, which is an interesting way to start the movie.
It is.
In 2023. Like, I feel like when this movie, like, newsreels, it was a common thing.
Yeah.
But we don't necessarily see them nowadays.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting way to start
the movie. Was that, like, where did people watch newsreels? Were they, like, at the beginning of movies?
I think so. I know there were cartoons at the beginning of some movies.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe,
like, I think newsreels were at the beginning.
Interesting. Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. The newsreel editor feels that until they know who or what Rosebud is, they won't have the whole story on Kane. He assigns a reporter called Thompson to investigate Rosebud. Thompson digs into Kane's life and hears a lot of stories, but none of them reveal the meaning of Rosebud. The reporter sees Susan Alexander Kane, the tycoon's ex-wife. She's drunk and won't speak to him. Then he reads the unpublished memoirs of Mr. Thatcher, Kane's early financial advisor and childhood guardian, who later became a prime target of the Kane newspaper's trust-busting attacks. In one of many flashbacks, the Thatcher memoir shows Kane's mother signing guardianship of the boy and his fortune over to Thatcher, despite his father's objections.
But, like, why? Why did he have a fortune?
As a kid?
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't really get into, like, what his parents did or why he would have that fortune.
Crazy.
When Charles objected violently to being sent away with Thatcher, Kane Sr. remarked, "What the kid needs is a good thrashing." Mrs. Kane responded, "That's why he's going to be brought up where you can't get at him." And some people that are watching it today would think of that as Mr. Kane was being abusive.
Mm-hmm.
1940s audiences were more likely to actually have believed that Mrs. Kane was overprotective and that if Charles had been allowed to grow up enjoying the love and discipline of his parents, his life would have turned out better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it would read differently to an older audience.
Mm-hmm. Years later, as he was about to get control of his business affairs, Kane's interest in newspapers was piqued when he noticed that he owned the struggling New York Daily Inquirer. "Don't sell it," he famously wrote to Thatcher. "I think it would be fun to run a newspaper," a statement that exasperates Thatcher greatly. That exasperation grows even more when Kane's paper starts attacking Thatcher's traction interests as corrupt and they suffer as a result. It's interesting, as I watched this movie, and this has nothing to do with the actual movie, as they showed, like, a young Orson Welles, I thought, mm-hmm. Orson Welles was a pretty good-looking guy.
Yeah.
He was as a youngster.
He was. How old was he when the movie was made? Do we know that?
41. He was 41. No. It was 1941.
Oh,
I was thinking what year it came out. No, he was in his 20s. Like, he was young.
Yeah.
He was born in, well, he was born in 1950.
So the age he was.
So he's 26.
At, like, the start of the newspaper is his actual age.
Yeah, he was 26.
They did a, given the time that it was, they did a decent job of
making
aging.
Him older.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
They did a worse job with other people. They did a better job with Orson Welles than they did with, like, Jedediah.
Yeah. Thatcher confronted Kane at the Inquirer to talk about attacking businesses that Kane himself owns considerable stock in, as well as throwing so much money away on low-class journalism such as instigating the Spanish-American War. However, Kane defiantly told Thatcher that he wanted to use journalism to protect the interests of ordinary people like the likes of Thatcher and intended to use his personal resources to keep the newspaper running at an annual $1 million loss for 60 years if necessary. This movie is a lot about William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah.
I mean, it's based on a lot of people. William Randolph Hearst, I have a few back, because as we're talking about him being a newspaper mogul, kind of.
Yeah.
A few background things about William Randolph Hearst. During filming, Orson Welles received a warning that William Randolph Hearst had arranged for a naked woman to jump into his arms when he entered his hotel room. And there was also a photographer in the room to take a picture that would be used to discredit him. Welles spent the night elsewhere, and it is unknown if the warning was true. Hearst was so angered by the film that he accused Orson Welles of being a communist in order to keep the film from being released.
Okay, but, like, if you don't want people to think that it's about you, don't have that reaction.
Yeah. I think it was probably kind of well known.
But he could just be like, that's not me. I said this when we were watching it, though. Like, older Kane Mm-hmm. Gives me some Trump vibes. Him wanting to
when be... When he wants to be...
In politics? Yeah. Yeah, that and the giant resort estate in Florida very much gave me some Trump vibes. I do think that Kane, as a character, is a better person than Trump is, but it definitely gave me some vibes there.
I would say that as well.
Like, that clearly was not what they were going for, but now watching Yeah, that too.
I would say as well.
That too. The wanting to collect every statue in the world.
Yeah. The scene shifts to an office at a time considerably sooner than 6 years later, in which Kane's bankrupted media empire is placed under the control of Thatcher. Thatcher noted that while Kane would still be richer than him, his former ward never made significant investments with his money, but instead squandered much of it on buying things. Kane speculated that if he had not been so rich, he might have become a great man and everything Thatcher hates. Next, Thompson interviews Bernstein, the general manager of Kane's newspaper empire. In further flashbacks, Bernstein recalls how he, Kane, and Kane's college friend Jedediah Leland, played by Joseph Cotten, took over the stuffy, unprofitable Inquirer and transformed it into a money-making, eventually hiring the staff at the rival New York Chronicle. At Bernstein's urging, Thompson seeks out Leland, who recounts the story of Kane's first marriage to Emily Norton. I'm going to stop right there because it is the 52nd most popular segment in podcast history. History.
5 degrees. 5 degrees or less of jinkly.
Ruth Warwick, who plays Emily Kane, is in Let's Dance.
Dancing for this audio format we're using. He's dancing.
Is in Let's Dance with Betty Hutton. Betty Hutton is in Annie Get Your Gun, which some of the scenes in Annie Get Your Gun are directed by Busby Berkeley.
Okay.
And Busby Berkeley directed Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which starred Gene Kelly. And
that was quite a few connections.
Yeah, and Busby Berkeley, I think most of his scenes were reshot in Any Gear Gun. Mm. So he is very minimal. Also in Let's Dance is Fred Astaire, but that was too easy. So I wanted to find a different one than Fred Astaire. Like, it could have said Ruth Warwick is in Let's Dance with Fred Astaire.
And I was going to say, like, I feel like there shouldn't be that many degrees for a movie from this time period, but...
I mean, also, this isn't a musical. Like, non-music, it still can be difficult.
You just have fun with it. It's just enjoyable for you.
I did enjoy it.
I'm so glad.
I did enjoy it. Joseph Cotten is in Shadow of a Doubt.
I like Joseph Cotten.
Probably, which is actually Hitchcock's favorite of his films.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I like Joseph Cotten.
Yeah, I like him too. Anyways, who recounts the story of Kane's first marriage and makes some negative comments about his one-time friend's character. Charlie was never brutal. He just did brutal things. He married for love. That's why he did everything. That's why he went into politics. It seemed we weren't enough. He wanted all the voters to love him too. All he really wanted out of life was love. That's Charlie's story. Mm-hmm. Leland goes on to describe Kane's second marriage to Susan Alexander. Kane started seeing her while he was still married to Emily during his campaign for governor. And this is when I think a lot, because William Randolph Hearst also had a mistress. So I feel like whenever it got to, he hated it because it showed his infidelities. And
was William Randolph Hearst married to somebody who was like somehow connected to politics?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that part.
Okay. Because she was the niece of the current president, was that it?
He ran on a ferocious anti-corruption platform, promising to investigate and bring down his opponent, Jim Geddes. Geddes found out about Susan and threatened to tell the press unless Kane withdrew from the race. He refused, the story came out, and he lost the election along with his first marriage. In the immediate aftermath of that defeat, Leland drunkenly incensed at Kane humiliating his family and then treating the public's political rejection of him as if they were his serfs, asked to be transferred to the Chicago newspaper to get away from him. He married Susan soon after his divorce from Emily was final. Although her singing talent was modest, Kane was ambitious on his wife's behalf. The singing,
because you mentioned
as we watched it that it's not that bad.
No, it's not like you would get up out of the theater. It's so terrible. It's just not like amazing. It's just it is. She's hitting the notes.
The person, because it's not the actual actress's voice. The person who did the singing is actually an opera singer who was asked to sing out of her register.
Okay.
Which is why it sounds like it could be, but it's someone who's really good at singing, not singing where they comfortably are. And she said that she would do it, however, if they didn't advertise that it was her, because she was afraid that she would lose jobs.
That makes sense.
But yeah, but it's actually a well-known singer who just was asked to sing probably higher than her register.
It's interesting because, like, there were a couple of notes, like, when she was practicing with the, I don't know, the voice teacher that he got for her, she was singing, like, a little bit flat, but, like, on one note, it went a little flat. But that was really it. Like, when they were watching it in the theater, there were women going, this is dreadful. And, like people were, like, talking in the audience about how bad it was. And, like, I don't think that would happen. I don't think that the person would get, like, you know, future jobs or anything if they were singing publicly. But I also don't think that people would be, like...
This is beautiful.
I don't think that they would be, like, verbally accosting the person while they were singing. Like, it wasn't that bad.
Although her singing talent was modest, Kane was ambitious on his wife's behalf, paying for voice lessons, built an opera house in Chicago, and financed an elaborate production for her debut. Opening night was poorly received by the audience to the point where Kane is quickly left alone, applauding his wife's performance. Kane arrived at the offices of the Chicago Inquirer to find Leland drunk again and pass out over his typewriter, his cheek resting on his unfinished and very negative review of Susan's performance. Kane finished the review in the same negative vein and ran it in all his papers, but fired Leland. Susan wanted to quit, but Kane insisted she kept performing until a suicide attempt convinced him she needed to give up singing. The couple moved to Florida, and Kane began working on Xanadu. What were you going
to say? That was a lot. She was, like, being worked to death. That was a lot.
Yeah.
I'm shocked she didn't leave him sooner. He was, like, forcing her to do something she did not want to do for, I don't know how long. They were showing her singing for a really long time.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a lot to watch. That is a trigger warning for anyone who plans to watch this movie.
The couple moved to Florida and Kane began work on Xanadu, where most of the remaining scenes are set. Kane's 49,000-acre private pleasure ground is built for Susan, includes a man-made mountain, a golf course, vast gardens, a zoo, and, of course, a mansion. Kane declined.
That was intense. There were, like, monkeys and stuff. It was nuts.
Susan would do jigsaw puzzles in Long Beach, New York. Kane declined to leave Xanadu, but did arrange an event he called a picnic involving an overnight stay in the Everglades. A large animal spit roasted over a fire, richly furnished tents, musicians, and many guests. In their tent, Susan accused him of trying to buy love, despite never loving anyone but himself, and of never giving her anything that mattered. He slapped her.
Which, to take, I mean, not the slapping part, but to take it back to Gilmore Girls, that picnic very much looked like a Life and Death Brigade event, which you don't know what that is because you don't watch Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. But it was like a rich kids club where they went and did these like amazing events and always pulled a crazy stunt. And it very much gave me Life and Death Brigade vibes. Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, she left him. She almost wavered in her resolve to go when he begged her not to, saying she'd have everything her own way. However, he then turned the emphasis back on himself, saying, "You can't do this to me." At that, Susan angrily realizes the inherent selfishness behind that statement and then defiantly walked out on him. From the Kane's butler, Raymond, Thompson hears how Kane trashed Susan's room after she left, but stopped when he came across the snow globe. As Kane pocketed the snow globe, Raymond heard him say Rosebud. Raymond has no idea what it means. However, he tells Thompson that he was in the room to hear Kane say Rosebud again just before he died.
Okay.
So
maybe he was there. But where would he been? Just like in the corner?
Possibly. I have no idea.
Why didn't they like show him to us? I'm very confused.
I don't know. In Xanadu's big stone hall, the reporters are getting ready to leave. The place is jammed with packing crates full of art and household goods, some valuable, some not. Thompson explains to the other reporters that he never found the meaning of Rosebud, but that it doesn't matter. I don't think it explains anything. I don't think any word explains a man's life. The camera pans across the crates and finds a sled that Kane played with in the scene where his parents turned him over to Thatcher. The word Rosebud is stenciled on it.
So, like, okay. I feel like we were just watching a show where they were, like, joking. Not joking. They were talking about what Rosebud meant. It was his Rosebud. I can't remember what show it was, though. Anyway. So, is Rosebud, like, his reminder of, like, he is the way he is because his parents sold him to these people, or like what
I think, like? I thought Rosebud was a more innocent time for him.
That could be
and a like a when he wasn't didn't have all this money and he didn't have all this pressure and all of this going on, and it was just a time when he could just play.
Yeah.
And be free and not worry about anything, really, is what I thought Rosebud meant to him.
Okay. Yeah. That's...
But I think it's up for interpretation. I mean, I don't think there is a right way or right meaning of what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's whatever someone wants it to mean to them.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting because I feel like there's so much talk about, like, what Rosebud means. Mm-hmm. When, like, I mean, not that I think it's simple. I just think, like, it could be multiple. Like, what you were saying, it could be go back to his simplicity of his life. It could be going back to, like, that's the moment everything changed. Like, it could be so many things. It doesn't need to be, like, one. It's not like there's, like, a secret that we all need to
I don't think out. There is. When people say, I think it's a question that people just ask. I don't think they really want to know the actual answer because we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea. Maybe Orson Welles actually did have a thought of what it meant. Maybe. I mean, I don't know what was going through his mind.
I just don't think I don't think he had some like big grandmaster plan of like what he thought it was.
Yeah.
I think it could mean many things.
Yeah. A few background things. Despite all the publicity, the film was a box office flop and was quickly consigned to the RKO vaults. At the 1941 Academy Awards, the film was booed every time one of its 9 nominations was announced.
Wow.
On the night the movie opened in San Francisco, Orson Welles found himself alone with William Randolph Hearst in an elevator at the city's Fairmont Hotel.
Yeah.
Aware that his father and Hearst were actually friends, Welles extended an invitation to the magnate to attend the film's premiere. Hearst turned down the offer, and as he was about to exit the elevator at his floor, Welles remarked, "Charles Foster Kane would have accepted." Originally, the movie was going to be based on the life of Howard Hughes, with Joseph Cotten in the lead. Eventually, Orson Welles realized nobody would believe most of the stuff Hughes had done, so he decided to make Kane a media baron instead. For this movie, Orson Welles, one of the things that people think so highly of this movie is it. A lot of the techniques, camera techniques that people used are from, that or have used since then, are from Citizen Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And for this movie, Orson Welles, along with cinematographer Greg Toland, pioneered quote-unquote deep focus, a technique that keeps every object in the foreground, center and background in simultaneous focus. This brought a sense of depth to the two-dimensional world of movies. This is the first film score of Bernard Herrmann, who... is more well known for Hitchcock movies.
Yeah, it's kind of had that feel to it.
Yeah. Orson Welles tried to buy out the screen credit of co-writer Herman J. Mankiewicz. Welles actually paid him $several thousand. However, the Writers Guild got wind of this and said that was not permitted. When Welles tried to get his money back, Mankiewicz had already spent it. Co-writer Herman Mankiewicz actually knew William Randolph Hearst and his mistress. Both Mankiewicz and cinematographer Greg Toland had been ejected from one of Hearst's famous parties at his elaborate homestead, San Simeon, for excessive drinking.
Can you just figure out what show it was that we were watching that referenced Rosebud?
What show?
It was The Office. Andy is having a conversation with his dad, and they can hear it on the baby monitor. And Oscar says, "I guess we found Andy's Rosebud."
Yes.
But then they have a discussion about what Rosebud actually means. I could hear the voices. I knew it was a show I watched regularly.
Yeah.
I'm good
the
now.
Movie's
I'm
line,
really focused.
The movie's line, Rosebud, was voted as number 3 of the 100 Greatest Movie Lines by Premiere Magazine in 2007.
See, this is where they lose me. I think it's a good movie. I think it's definitely good given the time that it was made. I don't think that the word, should carry that much weight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a really good movie. I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of symbolism in it. I feel like it would be pretty interesting if you kind of knew a little bit about what William Randolph Hearst had done throughout his life. Like, I feel like people would want to see it for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it should be, like, one of the world's greatest movies.
Yeah. The number one line was, you have a guess?
No.
Here's looking at you, kid, from Cousin Walker, was number one. I don't know what number 2 was. I'm assuming the other ones that were up there were Frank, my dear, I don't give a damn was probably up there.
Oh, yeah, that's... first I thought that was Casablanca, but that's not.
Yeah.
That's Gumwood.
Probably Wizard of Oz. I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore, so that was probably up there.
Probably, there's no place like home, I would think.
Or no place like home. Yeah. But I do know that number one on the list, I couldn't find the list again, but I did find that number one was, here's looking at.
That's a good one.
That's not my favorite line.
Of any movie or that movie?
No, I do have a favorite line of it.
Okay, what is it?
From Some Like It Hot. The final line is, well, nobody's perfect. And that's my favorite line of any movie.
Yeah, you've funny. Told me that before.
Yes.
That's a good movie. I think we do get to watch that one. I
love the movie. All right, so that is Citizen Kane.
That is Citizen Kane.
So what are your thoughts about Citizen Kane?
I love it. I feel like I've explained myself enough, but I enjoy it. I think it was ahead of its time in terms of aging people. I feel like you could be, there are movies that are really bad at aging people, especially from that time period.
Yeah.
I feel like they did a decent job. And I think it was interesting the way they went through all of it. Even just like, the scenes of him and his first wife having breakfast every morning and like following through that. Mm-hmm. And then like that juxtaposition with his second wife and like all of her singing things. Mm-hmm. Like it felt very chaotic while it was happening. I don't know. It was good. It was good. It's a good movie. I just don't think it's like one of the greatest, but it's good.
Yeah. I get really bored halfway in.
Do you? See, like, it doesn't bore me. I think that's why I like it. I'm like, actually,
and I like old movies. I have always felt that it was the ultimate movie, ultimate example of a movie that nobody really likes but pretends that they like, and that this is a movie that people, to sound smart, will be like, I like Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. However, then I watched 2001 A Space Odyssey, and that has taken number one on that list, even though I just had people at work shocked that I didn't like it because they love that movie, so I don't know what's going on anymore. But Citizen Kane, I don't know what it is about it. I think it's so boring. And I wanted to like it. And I didn't remember how I felt the first time. I was like, I don't think I liked it, but I'm not 100% sure. Mm. I understand our need to give credit to films that create something. Films that stand out and when they show up, create a way of cinematography, create something new. We always feel like that is going to be, that deserves a place on a pedestal. Snow White is another one of those because that was the first full, like fledged, like long animated movie. And so people, I was listening to a podcast and they think that deserves to be on the top, however many, like top 50 movies or whatever, because of what it did for animation. But like, as far as animated movies go, it's maybe 120th on my list. Like, yeah. I don't think it's good at all.
Yeah, standalone, it's not.
But this is
what Ryder Strong was talking about on the Pod Meets World podcast. He was talking about how he rates movies based on how they move if they push the culture, like, ahead.
Yeah. And I've learned that I don't.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't mean anything to me. We've seen this type of filmmaking so
many times
and better since this movie came out.
But then that makes me sad, though, because then, like, eventually we're going to reach a point where there's no moving forward. We've seen it all. So, like, we're not going to be impressed by anything.
To me, it's still if the story's good.
Yeah,
Citizen Kane, I feel this extremely.
That's why I can read my trashy romance novels, because the story is
to me, it's the story's good. This, as I was watching this, I kept thinking of another biopic type movie that is actually a biopic, but is also fictional because a lot of it is made up, even mm-hmm. though it's Yankee Doodle Dandy is another biopic.
Yeah.
Even though it's of George M. Cohan, but like when George M. Cohan first saw the movie, he saw like the last year of his life. It was made when he was only had a year or so left. He said, that was a good movie. Who was that about? Because it was so fictionalized.
Yeah.
And I am so invested in that story. And that is a much better movie, in my opinion. Than this. Very few people are going to say it. Maybe it's because of the songs, because I am a musical fan.
Yeah,
if this had music.
Well, and I think you have nostalgia tied to it, too.
Yeah. But I'm way more interested. And like, I watched Yankee Doodle Dandy for the first time as a 12-year-old and loved it. I would have fallen asleep if I watched this as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, but they're different audiences.
Yeah, I know that. But I think it's boring. And we give much...
Dandy kind of bores me, but I didn't see it until I was, like, in my 30s.
And I think we give too much credit for
movies that do push, that like are the first to do a certain thing. When they're cool in the day, in the day,
yeah, and I think they should get the credit.
They should get credit for that, but we shouldn't talk about how they shouldn't be in the top like realm of movies because of that. As the days go on,
that's fair. I think it just depends on how you rank movies.
Yeah. So Ryder Strong and I can argue about that when next time we meet.
Yeah. I wonder. Now I want to see his. What was the account they were talking about? What?
Oh, I'm not on his, but I'm on it. Yeah, Letterboxd.
I want to see if he rated Citizen Kane, because I'd be curious to know what his thoughts are.
Yeah. So what do you rate this movie out of 10?
8.
Right.
I like it. I enjoy this movie.
I'll give it a 4.
Wow. It's low, man.
It was either a 4 or a 3.
All right. Well.
So I went up to a 4. Who would like this movie in the Gilmore Girls universe?
I was going to say Richard or Emily, but maybe not, because it's more about like how empty his life was with all of his money and stuff. So I don't know. I could see Luke liking it. I could see Luke hating him. I can see him thinking that Citizen Kane was like an awful, terrible human.
Would, I don't know the characters near as well as you do. I'm thinking of the younger characters. Would Logan like this movie?
I think he would understand certain parts of it. I think he would have his own take on why he said Rosebud. Uh-huh. I think he would definitely buy into when Kane said, like, if I hadn't grown up with all this money, I could have been a good person. Like, I think he would buy into that too. Probably people in his family probably like the movie. I could see it being a movie that like the Huntsberger family watches, because his dad was like a big newspaper guy. So yeah, that's a good call.
That was my first thought. All right, so this was Citizen Kane. Also, and I will put it in our show notes, make sure if you feel the need, you can always buy us a cup of coffee. It helps with any odds and ends of price wise. So you, it's Buy Me a Coffee. You can definitely go to that in our show notes if you feel the need to on a whim. The next movie we're going to watch is Fiddler on the Roof, which is probably a two-nighter because it's for us, because it's 3 hours long.
I love
the movie. All right, so that is all for today, and we will talk to y'all next time. Bye.
Bye.